Welcome. As the world recognized International Elimination of Violence Against Women Day, women's rights activists in India have been on edge because there's a crucial hearing coming up in the Supreme Court this week. After India's top court in July accused the country's women of misusing a law created to protect them from harassment by their husbands and their in-laws, a five-judge panel of the Supreme Court will be meeting this week to revisit that judgment. We're talking about the anti-dowry law introduced in 1983, originally designed to safeguard women from abuse and sometimes death in the hands of husbands and in-laws. In July, the Supreme Court ruled that the act was now being used as a weapon by disgruntled wives and issued an order restricting the automatic arrest of the husband or his family members when dowry cases are filed until the complaint is verified by a three-person committee of civil society members. Now, while the court stated that grave physical injury or death of the aggrieved would be exceptions to this directive, it observed that many complaints filed under the anti-dowry law were not bona fide and said that uncalled for arrests may ruin the chances of a settlement or reconciliation. Now, women's rights activists had slammed the verdict, which they say makes a law put in place to protect women meaningless, that it does irreparable damage to the provision in the IPC that criminalizes cruelty towards married women by their husbands and in-laws. In October, the Supreme Court did a U-turn and observed that it disagreed with its earlier order, diluting Section 498A of the Indian Penal Code, and will be reviewing it this week. And we're asking tonight, is it true or is it a dangerous false myth that women routinely misuse domestic cruelty laws? And does the Supreme Court's July verdict on Section 498A place family honor before women's rights? On the show tonight, Supreme Court lawyer Vrinda Grover, Siddharth Luthra, former Additional Solicitor General, Deeptanshu Shukla, men's rights activist. He has fought and won his own dowry harassment case. Shailaja Chandra, former Chief Secretary, Delhi, retired IAS officer. Poonam Utreja, the Executive Director of the Population Foundation of India. Filmmaker Deepika Bhardwaj in India, where crimes against women are rampant. She is a female documentary filmmaker that stands out as a rare voice for abused men. She's made a documentary film that she hopes will help persuade authorities to rewrite this law. And then we have Sanjay Srivastava, Professor of Sociology at the Institute of Economic Growth, Delhi University. Vrinda, let's start by asking you the question we opened with. There is an increase in the number of fake dowry harassment cases, and that's on the rise. Is this a myth or is this truth? And if it is a myth, then who's perpetuating it and why?
I cannot answer this question with any reasonable surety because we have not ever done systematic study. The NCRB does not disaggregate data, and that is why there is the concern expressed with the kind of directives that the Supreme Court has given. Is this provision peculiar and being rampantly abused? Is it being used? And there are certain places where the investigating agency perhaps is being going overboard. We don't know because nobody has done a study of the cases. Nobody has analyzed judgments. Most of it has come from what I would call anecdotal hearsay.
Then why has the court made such strong statements? Because the court has even said that this is the easiest way if you want to harass your husband or your in-laws is you get them arrested.
All studies would show to you that the woman goes to the police station as a last resort. After having exhausted, in fact, various other informal means of resolving, settling issues. The Supreme Court was dealing with one case. The Supreme Court did not have before it a study, an analysis of what has happened in the last 20, 25 years with this provision. How the Supreme Court has made the jump from the individual case to a generalization that all women, and to call them disgruntled wives, I think is in itself does not reflect what that provision is about. And the only place where they have said that they will look at and allow women to access justice is if either the woman is dead and you can't deny that she must have suffered severe harm, or if there is tangible physical harm. And I think that in itself is very, very destructive of the entire rationale behind the provision. The Supreme Court has said in its judgment, certain studies. There is not a footnote there to help us understand what are those studies. I can instead show you multiple studies which will show that this provision is underused and that NCRB data will show that there is abuse by investigating agencies, by others, lawyers making suggestions that they ought not to clients, of all provisions of law.
So it's a larger system. Okay, Deeptanshu, you fought and won your own dowry harassment case, so we know where you stand on this, but perhaps you have sisters, perhaps you have a daughter. So let me ask you, I'm not in any way condoning anybody who has misused the law, but do you think we are taking away or we're dismissing the socio-cultural reality of Indian women today, where we need strong laws like this to safeguard them?
We analyze the law over a period of time, and if we find that the use of the law is less than the misuse, then that goes directly against Blackstone's formulation, which says
the use of the law is less than the misuse. You're saying there's more misuse than
Misuse than use, being my observation.
Why do you say that? And where are the studies? Rinda says there aren't no studies, so I'm assuming you have studies to make such a strong statement.
I have the judges whose comments have come, and I'll tell you this particular
in individual
judgment.
Individual cases each time.
Please let me complete. I have come here with more than 24 judgments where the judges have observed that this law is being grossly misused.
Correct, now, see, but you're saying there are more cases that are of misuse than there are of dowry harassment cases. That is a very strong statement. So I'm sure there must have been studies, right? If it's so obvious.
It is my observation.
Even today we have dowry deaths. I'm told 22 dowry deaths a day.
Let's not confuse dowry deaths with dowry harassment over here. Because dowry
leads to that.
Dowry death has a separate law, 304B.
Once they're dead.
But that law is such that no criminal, if he has committed the crime, can ever escape the clutches of that law. That is the most draconian law which is available, because the burden of proof shifts on the accused to prove that you have not committed the crime. Now, why I'm saying is that I trust the judgment of the judges is because, see, unlike me and the other people around here who get to know the case from a complainant's perspective, the judges see the evidence on record. And these Supreme Court judges haven't directly gone there. They've come.
Response.
Just to say, let us please remember the Rajesh Sharma judgment is about quashing. There is no evidence recorded. The trial has not commenced. There is no evidence before the court in this case at all. That is why I'm saying this extrapolation, even if the Supreme Court makes the jump has to be substantiated by something. Please look at the NFHS data, National Family Health Survey data. What is the record of violence against women?
It's a biased data.
Why? It's a government study. If a government study is not acceptable,
why is it biased? Because the questions which are asked is, how many times have you been hit by your husband? How many times have you experienced domestic violence? Have you ever in your life experienced domestic violence? There are no questions which ask, have you perpetrated domestic violence on your husband?
That would give you a different
you are not
finding.
Even asking the man of this country.
Actually, there is, and there is quite a sizable number in that NFHS survey where women have expressed, yes, they did perpetrate violence on their husband, but we never talk about that.
One second. Questions are biased. My question is this. Depends on what the case is. If I have filed a case that my husband has beaten me, and if you have filed a case that your wife has beaten you, I'm assuming they're asking the same question to me and the same question to you. So how is it biased? If you've been beaten by your wife, they will ask you how many times has she beaten you.
They did not ask a question from husbands whether you have experienced domestic violence. So whenever we talk about domestic violence, we only talk about from women's perspective.
And that's what I'm saying, sir. Only interview
498A, which deals with domestic violence.
So it's biased from inception.
Only there for women. And I can answer, Sarah.
Okay, so you're saying there is no organization to look into cases for men?
Of course there isn't. Okay, there isn't any organization.
Can we just have some basic principles here?
I think what you're trying to say here is that the laws are unequal. But can we expect laws to be equal in a country where there's so much inequality? It's just inherent in us. Are you taking away the woman's basic protections, the few protections that we have, the right to complain against someone who is harassing you and a harassment that could lead to death, that could lead to you committing suicide? Or do I wait to die in order for a strong case to come against the perpetrators?
There are several laws and there is a lot of overlap.
Laws to protect women, there are about 34 in our country. On this scale, globally, we are doing very well. We have plenty of laws. It's the implementation, which is in a mess. We all know that.
Okay.
Let us look at 498A. It came in 1983, as you said. We have crossed about 35 years. statistics will never bring this out. Well, the conviction rate is not very high. It's about 15%. I may be wrong, but that's what the internet tells me.
Why is that important?
It's important because if it was a high conviction rate, it justifies that action was necessary. You may say that the judges were against
or
the
evidence. You also have a low conviction rate when it comes to rape. Does that mean the rape didn't happen?
No. Hear me out, because you're deflecting what I'm trying to say. My perception all along was, as an administrator, as a person who was in society, who met people, that it's a very good law and must stay. But when I went to the Public Grievances Commission, and the cases didn't come to me, but I became aware of grievances, and the number of cases where people were complaining that it isn't the woman who was making the complaint, it was all completely manufactured in the house, to be able to nab a particular family because of dowry dilution. I want to give you one example. A woman gets married in 15 days. She tears up with a pair of scissors. The husband suits her own trousseau. It's found out that she was mentally imbalanced. Nobody said that the marriage was, she should have been, this should have been shared. It wasn't shared. They then had this case made against the family. I knew this family for 40 years. They were incapable of doing this. They were sitting in the crime against women's cell on a bench outside the police officers and not being heard for 4 hours and five. With all my clout, all the people I knew, there's nothing I could do to help. They had to buy their way out of trouble. 15 lakhs had to be paid, despite the fact that they said, take away all your jewelry. We will get you treated. They were that decent. The boy is now happily married. He has two children, no problems at all. It may be anecdotal, maybe one, but I do feel that the judges were right up to this point, that they protected a case of harassment, which
was individual case, anecdotal, which is what Vrinda is saying. Poonam, then respond over here. We have Shailaja who's saying it is a good law, it must stay, but there are low conviction rates.
I don't think that's an indicator of the law being wrong. The conviction rates are low because of the way the police, the way the male patriarchal society who are involved in access to justice or lack of access to justice, that is the problem. And let me say, the Crime Bureau's data for 2015 shows that one-third of the cases against women, criminal cases against women, are perpetuated by the in-laws and the husband. Given those numbers, I don't know why we are taking a few genuine anecdotal evidences and then saying that this law isn't working. Give me one law in India that is not misused. Give me one law in India that is not abused. And while I do not condone abuse of any law, but in this case, for us to take a few cases, genuine as they may be, and then say the case, the 498A isn't working, is so unfair. And second, I'd like to say, it is unfortunately not just the men which have a patriarchal mindset. Let's go back to NFHS data. The data shows that 56% women say, the last NFHS 4, it is legitimate for the husband to beat them under one or the other circumstances.
15 and the to men, 19-year-olds over 50% believe that beating
exactly,
your wife is
even
acceptable
women.
Is the norm.
So what are you talking about?
And so that's the society we live in. But Deepika, come in here. Here, all laws in India are misused. It's not the fault of the low conviction rate is a reflection of the police who have not carried out good investigations, like in this case. Should you not be directing your anger, instead of going to the court, why don't you do a film on how the police system needs reform, and when false cases are done, they need to investigate it properly?
Give me a law which is misused to an extent of 498A. Tell me a law in which 2.7 million people arrested in that? 27 lakh people arrested, 6 lakh women arrested under 498A in the last 15
right
years.
Right on Chhattisgarh.
Any law wherein you're sitting here in Delhi and you're accused of perpetrating some kind of violence, you have to go to Jammu and Kashmir and attend a case. Why shouldn't we talk about misuse? If, and I personally feel, Sarah, that misuse is while it's an injustice to the person being accused falsely, it is also an injustice to genuine victims.
If we dilute this law, would we take away the little protection that women have in the millions of genuine cases?
Okay, so it's not taking away the protection from millions of women. I think that's an absolute myth which is being spread. I personally feel so.
Why?
No, all right. I'm talking about a judgment, sir. Why are we talking about settlements in a criminal case any which ways? Why aren't we raising that point? What's this 15 lakh settlement means? Isn't this an injustice to the woman?
I think she needs to attend the court.
I have attended. Please don't presume that I haven't attended court.
Well,
I have. I was in Chandigarh High Court, and in front of me it was asked, 35 lakh rupees le lo or settle karo case.
Just a few things we need to, because I think by the end of the program, we are going to be told actually there's no patriarchy, there's no violence against women. Because this is where we are all going, and we are being told that this is all a myth. Nothing is happening.
Please don't say what I have not said, and at least in
did
my
I say
name,
you
no,
said?
I did not say that.
She did not.
Don't this judgment.
I am not interested in answering
this judgment,
you.
No, but you are supposed to.
I don't want to get into patriarchy.
This is power. This is patriarchal power at play.
Women is a myth. That's it.
I just want to get
Siddharth.
Can I just finish what I'm saying? Patriarchy is at the heart of 498A. Why is there judicial anxiety? And you see this from Arnesh Kumar, Rajesh Sharma, everywhere. This is judicial anxiety. Where is it coming from? A woman, a daughter-in-law in the Indian family is not an equal person. She has traditionally, conventionally, in all forms, been subordinate. 498A is about equality. It's about dignity. It's not only about dowry. Cruelty, mental and physical. Equality and respect. When the underclass is going to seek equality and respect, there will be turmoil. There will be judicial anxiety.
Okay,
Rajesh
Sharma
reflects that.
We need to understand what the Supreme Court verdict is about, because that's something which needs to be said. Whether 498A is right or wrong, it's very clear. It is a beneficial piece of legislation and it needs to be there. The concern, as most of us have said, is about enforcement. Before Rajesh Kumar, we had Arnesh Kumar's case. Both these judgments really say, while 498 exists, there are certain concerns, and therefore they brought on mechanisms by which the impact of 498A on arrest can be diluted. The Supreme Court's three-judge bench finds that this is a piece of judicial lawmaking, and therefore this needs reconsideration. It is not about 498A. Mm. It is not about whether 498A has aberrations or not, but the Supreme Court three judges bench sends it to 5, because way back in 2002 there are other judgments which said that the Supreme Court is not in the business of making law, and that's the concern that's been voiced. In Lalita Kumari's case, which is a constitutional bench judgment on FIRs, there was an exception carved out that for matrimonial cases, keeping in view there's an issue of family, of children, of the lady's concerns at stake, let's send it to what is known as a crime against women's cell, and let there be an inquiry before it reaches an FIR. Because, I must tell you candidly, and I agree with Vrinda and most of the people here, we do not have statistics, effective, fair statistics about any piece of legislation in our country. All over the world, every 5 years they review a legislation. In India, we are not doing it. Okay. And the second thing is the desire to bring in the committee system, which is not part of the legislation of this country. There is already a mechanism in all the states. There is a mechanism of the crime against women's cell, which exists either under the police acts and supported by the Supreme Court judgment. And that's the mechanism.
Okay, so
which
let's
is
talk about Sanjay. When you bring
FIR.
In a committee, when you bring in this committee that includes, I don't know, your neighbor, housewife, all of this, are you putting one more layer between the victim and justice?
Well, I think, look, I just want to go back to some of the earlier points. I don't have to be as circumspect as Vrinda or the other lawyer, because I'm not going to stand in front of a judge to be reprimanded by anyone. But look, judges are also a part of the society we live in. Judges are not beyond the patriarchal, masculinist Correct. Ideas the rest of us have. So there's no reason why a judge is not going to reflect certain ideas that exist in society. They're part of the same biases that we have. I sympathize with individual cases. Individual cases can never form the basis of how society functions.
Absolutely.
I have many friends who may have suffered. That doesn't mean that laws can be formed based on what my brother or sister or my neighbor has gone through. What I find really remarkable in our society, which is an extraordinarily patriarchal society, we're asking for protection for men. You know, it's like saying that why isn't there protection for tigers in the jungle and you know against gazelles or antelopes or whatever? The one of the larger social reasons for this is the rise in India of a particular kind of men's rights movements, which is an idea which says the men are the one who are suffering in this. As I say, I sympathize with individual cases, but you cannot have individual cases become the basis of what happens in society. And it is completely untrue. There's no research. Judges may not do research, I'm afraid. Filmmakers may not do research. Sociologists spend their whole life looking at research on what's happening to women. There's vast amounts of research on which this is based, especially and with women's movement that led that whose actions culminated in these acts. But based its actions on the research by anthropologists, sociologists, historians. Finally, what we don't seem to be concerned with is individual human happiness. What we think is really important is family honor. I mean, what is this family if it makes you miserable? And what is this committee that will take 1 month to decide upon it? And that committee will frequently have the kinds of people who unfortunately share the same patriarchal mindset that many of our judges share, many of our people in the creative arts share. So we need to understand that it is not only a legal issue and think widely about why is it that now we are saying that there are fake dowry cases. We are saying that now precisely because women are saying that we need justice. That's why.
Now, the court also said that if complaints are filed, it would also mean that reconciliation, reunion of the couple would not be possible if such a complaint is filed.
And that's a look, that's a big problem.
Is that disturbing?
It's very disturbing, and because we are not looking for reconciliation when an act of violence is done against a woman.
I want to play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Family, the woman, she's the mother, she needs to keep the family together is what the judge is saying, and as they're pointing out, judges are a reflection of our society.
The reconciliation does not mean that women have to compromise. Reconciliation doesn't mean that we accept violence as a norm. We have to change that norm. So I don't even understand reconciliation by whom? Not reconciliation by the woman, but reconciliation by laws which we want to change again or we are questioning. That to me is the worst form of reconciliation. This is a backlash against women. The minute there is opportunities, legal or otherwise, for women's empowerment or any society that is disempowered, whether it's tribals or it's the poor, there is a backlash. I don't understand why even men think violence against women is not a men's issue. It is much as much as a women's issue, society's issue and men's issue. And men have to work together with the women on changing this. And in the women's movement, we always find instead of taking two steps forward, that one little step we've taken forward, we're just maintaining the gains. We are struggling and fighting to maintain the gains along with the backlash.
Okay, Deepika, then respond to this. Are we prioritizing a marriage where mental, physical and sexual violence should be tolerated because, you know, the family will come apart? What will the neighbors say? Why does all of this have to lie on the shoulders of the woman?
I'll share a very recent case that I came across, all right? The girl belonged to a family which was very liberal and, you know, she was very used to going outside, partying and all of that. So she was used to that kind of lifestyle. She got married She got married into a little conservative family. Things did not work out. They parted ways. There was a 498A filed. And this is not just one case. There could be n number of issues because of which a marriage might fall apart. But invariably, in a lot of these cases, a domestic violence case of 498A may be filed. So in Supreme Court, in fact, in 2014, said that once an FIR is filed, the chances of reconciliation just completely go away. You know, husbands are becoming adamant not to take back wives. So even in our counseling centers, in mediation centers, in courts, they try to bring together the family because it's just not about anybody's rights every time.
The only reconciliation is changing social norms and the way men think. And two, I'd like to say, because a woman likes to go out is no reason for anybody to oppose her. It's a right to go out or not go out. And
How does that comment become relevant in the case of this woman? No physical violence. It is mental cruelty.
One-third of women in India suffer mental cruelty.
Absolutely, ma'am. We have
what Sarah said is impossible. Of mental cruelty. And how do you measure mental cruelty?
You take a divorce in part ways. That's why this law is quite flawed. Why are you putting the man in his entire trap?
Even the definition of cruelty is not clear.
Okay, in this particular case,
you're trashing mental cruelty.
There is a separate law for that, domestic violence. Why do you go for 498A?
No, Sarah, all that I'm asking is, is it a man's mistake if the marriage falls apart? If it's in case of incompatibility, why the man and his entire
this
family have to be charged in the 498?
Going out of party is not mental
violence. That's exactly the Rajesh.
Okay, can we get Siddharth? Can we get Siddharth?
Let's finish your point.
I must tell you, there's a concern that we must also address. Day in and day out, we find in the cause list of every high court, it's replete with the cases being listed where there are settlement petitions being filed. Now, these are filed because parties are either divorcing or they are willing to live together. So there is also a need, and I'm grateful to the sociologists, there is an analysis, but unfortunately, the analysis of existing court cases, why they are ending in a settlement quashment, is it a case where the lady is pressurized to settle, or is she settling for the cause of her children, or is it a case where she really wants to go back? And as the Supreme Court has noted, it's a case of over-implication. Remember, even this Supreme Court judgment says, let's try the system out, let's have the Legal Services Authority examine the concept after 6 months. Whenever we have a law, it is for the government to come in with a policy to examine the law, to have academics, to have professionals, to have bureaucrats on board to examine how is this law working out. And we have a problem here. Because
no, but my sir, question
this
is
statistic of quashment.
No, my question is this. I'm in an abusive marriage.
Yes.
I may decide on my own that I'm going to stay on for the sake of my child. And
right.
Once they're older, then maybe I'll move
absolutely.
On. Maybe
that's
I won't.
Absolutely.
But is it the government's job to tell me that I have to do that?
No, no. The government is not telling you to go that. The government. The government gives you a remedy of domestic violence. The government gives you a remedy of filing an FIR. The law gives you a remedy of seeking divorce. You have three remedies. Yeah. It is your decision which remedy you wish to choose. If you choose the criminal case, you can go for a mediation even at that stage to see whether there's a resolution or
and
not.
Courts have not just a right to intervene, they have a duty to intervene whenever there is a violation of fundamental rights, which is happening in this particular case.
Sir,
so just let me complete, please. I think a lot of women have got a lot of time to speak. Let me also complete.
The judgment is very revealing in itself. What is the title of the committee?
Family welfare.
What is 498A? Protection of women from violence. How did family and women coalesce into one another? They get conflated. Women then disappear from it. In fact, the bias and the prejudice that is inherent in all of us is also there in a little phrase there. Who will compose it? Wives of working officers. Yeah. Ms. Shalaja is sitting here. She was a working officer. Why did we assume there will be wives of working officers? There is a lot of bias which is there. We don't even know when it emerges. On the part of where is the data is within the custody of the judiciary in the domestic violence courts. How come there is not a whisper about that data? That's a civil law remedy.
It's about domestic violence.
Why didn't they look at that?
Family welfare takes precedence over women's rights, over women's dignities. But on the other hand, there's the other side of the story also. We have one gentleman here, Guru. What happened? What's your story?
I live in London, last 18 years. I got married here in Gurgaon in 2008. I put the advertisement on Times of India and looking for well-educated vegetarian girl from India. So my intention to take the girl back and, you know, as long as she's educated, that's what I was looking to get that. Minimum graduate or MA. That was my demand throughout wherever I get the girl. I got a lot of responses. Then I got one response from Gurgaon and they sent me the CV saying that she is well educated, convent educated. And I used to talk to her on the phone and she was well versed in English. And but she was not talking to me, actually. Her younger sister used to talk to me. It's a totally fake. Date of birth is fake. Educational details are fake. Everything's fake. I come to know within first 1 or 2 days only. Then I ask that, tell me your right education. Then, you know, I can make you educated. And I told her that before processing the visa, bring the education detail. This, she didn't bring the education detail. Visa got declined. Then she sent me the certificate of network university I find with the RTI, saying that these are the fake university. They are not exist in India. Then I just simply raised the question that, you know, why you have cheated? What is the reason? I still like you, but what is the reason? Just tell me the truth. Then she immediately gone and filed the 498A case.
They threatened me. You were cheated, you felt let down, you were hurt, and then she filed the case.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just going to play devil's advocate. I know it's an emotional issue for you, and it's highly unfair, but there are many cases of cheating, right? Those cheating cases are misused. Will we do away with the law?
In my case, I was not residing in India. I was in London that time. They immediately filed the FIR against me. Then I got arrested in 2014. Since 2014, I was in the jail for 14 days. After that also, again, I got arrested. I was there in the jail for 31 days. And I won the two cases against her.
Overall, it took what? How many years? 8 years?
It took me 8 years to fight.
And now you're awaiting your passport so you can...
Yes, my passport is still with the judge. Judge has told me to come from London. He said that he's going to decide my case within one day. Last 45 days, I don't have a place to stay.
Okay, Sanjay, this is also the reality today, right?
Look, no one's denying the problems that might happen with individuals, but that cannot be the point. I mean, unfortunately, the case the gentleman makes actually reflects many of the attitudes of which we have to deal with. So quite often, men will say, "I want to marry an educated woman." They want to marry an educated woman. They actually don't want to marry an independent woman. There's a difference between being educated and being independent. They want a woman who can get a job but not express independence.
But that's in this case, he was cheated. That's to be fair, he was cheated and marriage is not a loan. Women want larger, to marry guys who are educated, who earn well.
Why do we need to look at the larger context of what's happening here?
Okay, one second, hold on. Important point we're making here. The issue is about the arrest, not about the offense.
The concern in India is that there are indiscriminate arrests which lead to complications in a person's liberty, and that's the problem which the law has sought to address through Lalita Kumari, through Arnesh, and partly in this judgment. I agree with the concerns Brinda has, no doubt, but that's the issue. Secondly, there is the legislative change which has come in, which is reflected in 41A. So today, there are safeguards for arrest which were not available when he was arrested.
But the misuse of the law is not...
No, but why? When you say it's all about the arrest...
The problem is more fundamental. Having the criminal law is a necessity for an ordered society. But the implementation is something, and the deprivation of liberty, which is a serious concern for every individual. It is, and the way the Supreme Court has now interpreted it, it says if the offence is made out in the FIR, you will face prosecution.
The FIR comes only much later.
No, the FIR comes stat, except in matrimonial cases, cheating cases, and one or two other class of cases after Lalita Kumari. The FIR comes stat, and it's 45 days. It's not going to end because it's a 15-day window, and then 6 weeks later, if the inquiry is not complete, the FIR will come. So we must remember, it's not as if a person's liberty is...
But I want to pick up on what you said. It's all about the arrest, right?
Yes.
That's what everybody's talking about, worried about. But would you not say walking out of a marriage, going to a police station is a huge step?
Yes.
Are you now telling a woman that you have got to the police station and your husband who's been abusing you, your father-in-law who's been abusing you is not going to be arrested? He's going to be back at home. You have to go back and a committee will decide, and it will take a month. So you are hanging around there also able to approach you?
The point is, now you go back to Lalita Kumari. It anyway says 6 weeks even before the crime against women's cell.
In a country where you have 22 dowry deaths a day,
dowry deaths are in a different class. I'm sorry.
You're
mixing
two things.
Dowry deaths. No, there's a distinction.
Behind bars.
Dowry deaths and 498 are two different classes. Dowry deaths, FIRs are registered immediately. There is no inquiry.
But this is a preventive commission.
And 498A is different.
The effect of Rajesh Sharma is actually to throw women out of the justice system. It has created not a parallel process, it has diverted women who are suffering physical and mental cruelty, which is both on equal status in the law, now changed by the Rajesh Sharma judgment, into a committee, which, by the way, can consist of just about anybody. Mm. And they say, if required, they may get some basic training, because really listening to women is like, you know, I might as well go to my RWA and ask them. They probably know better about what's happening in my matrimonial home than this committee. And you can just talk to them over the telephone or via email, and give your report
to the police, and then the police will say, or the magistrate, they will say what is happening. This is not obstructing access to justice. It has thrown women, and not disgruntled wives, it has thrown women suffering violence out of the legal system.
Shailaja, please respond. After women have no recourse. It was already very tough, and now you've made it impossible.
Let us look at the practical thing. What has happened? The July judgment was given with certain facts before the judges. They gave a finding which was in the nature of guidelines. Those guidelines, I don't know if everybody knows, the one Women and Child Ministry has already formulated guidelines in keeping with that. Yes. Before those were, got into action, the new cognizance was taken in October by the higher court to look into it. Now, the question is that when you have a situation where guidelines are given, the first question is, is it judicial overreach to do that? I would like to say that Vishakha judgment was nothing but guidelines. It stayed over there for 15 years before it became a law. So there's nothing wrong with the judges giving guidelines.
No, but we're not saying there's anything wrong. We're talking about the guideline in particular that the judge has given.
Yeah, but that those guidelines are totally...
Just a minute. There was a gap in the
law. May I complete? Please, Brinda. I didn't interrupt you. Just give me an opportunity. I'm not used to standing in court and fighting. I'm used to being heard. So... Now, coming to what I was trying to say, when you have a situation where 498A is being agitated at the level of the Supreme Court, something has gone radically wrong in society. It doesn't reach the Supreme Court because it's a one case or a one anecdote, which Sanjay has been happily repeating. I was trying to make a case not for that family. I was trying to say, try and look at the fact that some things are going amiss. Now, when they have given these guidelines and when the ministry is in a position to do it, you get a new set of judges to look at it. I see absolutely nothing wrong with 498A staying. Nobody's saying do away with 498A. It has to stay. But in case there is this situation where it is not a case of physical harm, and it is mental harassment, it is incumbent on somebody, it doesn't have to be housewives, but somebody to look at whether a prima facie case is made, because in this case, the entire onus has been put on the criminal, which is not there for other sections of law. You have to be extremely careful. We are not being careful. So
okay,
I'm
going to give everybody a chance to make closing arguments. We're getting out of time. Hold on.
One clarification.
I'm sorry, something has gone extremely wrong. And here's Sonia, who also has faced... a situation where things went completely wrong. Sonia, aapki story kya hai? Bataiye, kya hua aapke saath?
Hi Sonia, I'm sorry. Mera hua tha saade 2009 mein, 10th mein. Unhone saare mera first day se saare ATM card wagera le liya tha mera. Ekdam saare ATM card wagera le liye. Mere saare paisa unhone le diya. Uske baad unhone torture shuru kar diya mere upar. Mentally and physically, दोनों तरफ से उन्होंने demanding सारी मानीज बहुत सारी demanding, but जब मैं fulfill नहीं कर पाई तब उन्होंने torture बहुत कर शुरू कर दिया उन्होंने उन्होंने मेरे family के साथ बात भी करना बंद कर दिया मेरे even कि मेरे मम्मी से भी बात बंद कर दिया मैं बहुत torture होके फिर मैं वापस आ गई मेरे मायके में पहले मैं job करती थी but now I'm jobless
नहीं तो आपने case file किया did you go to the police did you take legal recourse
मैंने अभी किया उसमें
तो क्या हुआ
उसमें अभी तक चली रहे केसेस में मेरा अभी तक शॉर्ट आउट नहीं हुआ
नहीं जब आप पुलिस के पास गए तो क्या हुआ था आपके पास
पुलिस के पास जब मैं गए थे उन्होंने ईप से लेने के लिए मना किया था मेरे केसेस उन्होंने नोएडा या फरीदाबाद में शिफ्ट करने के लिए कहा उसके बाद हम गए नहीं तो मेरा केस चल रहा है अभी
तो पुलिस ने केस फाइल किया कि नहीं किया
नहीं किया था उन्होंने
तो फिर अभी आपकी केस कैसे चल रही है
अभी
फाइनली फाइल किया था किसी ने
हाँ मैंने गया था एडवोकेट पास उन्होंने किया था भी फाइन
डीवी तो आपको फॉलो अप करना पड़ा
हाँ,
बहुत
फॉलो करना पड़ा डीवी एक्ट अभी चल रहे हैं मेरे बट उसका अभी तक कोई प्रोसीजर कंप्लीट नहीं हुआ चल ही रहा है अभी 6 साल हो गया मेरा अभी तक
6 साल और आपकी नौकरी अभी है
नहीं आई एम जॉबलेस नाउ
देन हाउ आर यू पेइंग फॉर ऑल दिस
मैं
लीगल फीस
वगैरह डिपेंड ऑन फैमिलीज
And you want to, okay, so this is the other reality, right?
So I
have to go in for closing arguments to everyone. Shailaja, first to you, you say something is extremely wrong. This is the reality that if, even before this new change, the Supreme Court July verdict, if you went to a police station, they would dismiss you. They would say, go back, sort it out, figure it out. Now, aren't you emboldening the police even more? to say that go back, listen, go to a committee, family welfare committee will listen to it. Whatever little
it's
recourse.
It's a pity that the police need to be brought into in the first place. It really is, because they really are wooden headed about these things.
They but they are the only recourse that a woman
black
has.
And white. They see it as a person, person who has
Shalija,
to be,
I'm sorry. If I'm in a marriage, I cannot go to my in-laws and ask them to solve it for me, right?
No.
I have to go to the police. I have to go to the law. So we can't say take the police out of the equation.
No, you have this committee, which the government is making committees with the right kind of people on it. I would say, allow me to just say that even the sexual harassment law, there is a need for a prima facie case to be established, because otherwise it's draconian what has happened. You are
it's
in
okay.
or out. This is really shameful. And if you don't have somebody, you have to trust somebody. If the government makes a committee and you're going to see even they are useless, nothing can be done. But the government would have been up in arms if this judgment had really been something so unacceptable. They, however, went along with it. Now we are waiting for a new judgment on whether this is tinkering into a process of the executive. It's a completely different issue. If the judges get into 498A, it will be very unfortunate. That's not the issue at all. And no one is saying 498A should be done away with. I'm only saying that the committee idea is not a bad one. What they had drafted was
okay,
in kind
your
of
closing argument, the committee idea is not a bad
not
one.
Not a bad
respond,
one. Yes.
There needs to be strong evidence. There needs to be a case before you go ahead. Is that realistic in a country like India? Would a woman in India actually go up and say that she has been beaten, raped, abused without that actually happening to her?
You
closing
know,
argument.
Tragic as it may be that a few men have been wronged in a country where 86% of the judges say, according to a research done by a lawyer, Sakshi, the NGO, shows that they have patriarchal mindsets where they said women who get raped deserve to get raped. In a country where there's so much negative, patriarchy is negative, negativity against women, life is so tough for women in terms of the violence they experience, mental, psychological, physical abuse, I would like to say society has to pay a price. I'm afraid till the men change and the women who have patriarchal mindsets change, I would like to say that it is tragic that things haven't changed. Things are continuing to be as wrong as they were, that we have to reach this situation. And I would really oppose this committee that decides while women fear that they're going to be beaten again or killed when they go home after reporting. And two, women will stop reporting. I will not report if I have to go back to the same husband
and, wait for a month
and father-in-law who beats me,
through.
Even for one day. I will not report.
Closing arguments, Tanshu. Society has to pay a price. Respond to this, your closing argument.
Yes.
For the larger good, you may be a father to a daughter, you may have a sister.
Right. See, first of all, it's very unfair to blame the Supreme Court judges, because Supreme Court judges in 90 out of 100 cases have passed such judgments in favor of women. Yes. The Vishakha guidelines is an example. There are examples like the triple talaq judgment. There are examples like the Shabano judgment. And I have a list of 50 judgments here where the Supreme Court has decided in favor of women.
But
so you cannot question ki they are biased.
And the
second,
Justice
my closing argument.
700 page order, 700 pages.
Yeah.
Hero,
but in
Justice
spite of that,
sorry.
Because
that's
public
the
opinion.
Order.
But to blame
but
judges is
public
yeah,
opinion.
It's not
the
fair.
Police,
if you get a judgment
women,
in your favor,
I'm blaming
it is fine. If you don't, it's biased.
It took a December 16th horrific
exactly.
rape case for us to reach that situation. It only happened because of public opinion.
No,
how
the
many such
changed.
Women
laws
will
changed.
Die
because of public
after
opinion?
Being
how many women have to die?
Can I
come
closing
to you?
My closing
argument. I'm coming to you. Let him finish. Closing argument.
I don't see so much of outrage regarding this particular judgment, because there is nothing new which has been made in this particular judgment. They have analyzed the past judgments, including that of Preeti Gupta, including that of Justice J.D. Kapoor, and even Dalbir Bhandari ji. Where they have taken the
argument.
There are a few good points of this judgment. One is, as we have an NRI example, it's a very welcome judgment for NRIs, because we have a helpline number for men in India, Save Indian Family, 888-498-498, and we get 8,000 calls per month, and so far we have received around 5,000 calls from NRIs. And they have been in a very similar situation.
So
how
NRIs
many of them are
priority,
false?
The numbers of NRIs compared to the rest of India. But anyway, Vrinda, your closing argument now, the fact is you're saying
both of them, Deepika's also saying this, there are enough laws to protect women in India. There are just no laws to safeguard the rights of men.
My heart bleeds for that.
No, seriously.
It's not, at, no, it's not a matter of laughter at all. No, there are people committing...
It's a complete joke.
Excuse me, sir.
Do a bit of research.
Yeah, so men are victims of patriarchy as much as women.
That you laugh at us.
Sorry, ma'am.
One second. Please. Hold on.
I brought the data.
Deepika, let Deepika.
11,000 farmers.
Hold on, 1 second. Let Deepika respond.
This is a...
We are completely out of time.
Men isn't a sympathy for women, ma'am.
You cannot give wrong statistics.
Men isn't. Are you laughing at the plight of men? Can anybody laugh at the plight of women today?
It's not a serious argument you're presenting.
Can we just... Deepika, please make your closing argument. He's making a closing argument.
I agree with Deepika. It's not something to be sarcastic about. This is the viewpoint of view that they feel strongly about. Let's not be dismissive of it. Deepika, please make your closing argument.
Yeah, Sarah, I think we have missed out on a lot of points on which Rajesh Sharma's judgment is bang on. One, it takes away the extra amount of efforts that were required earlier in order to go and quash the case when settlement happens. And settlements are happening. That's a reality initiated by women, initiated by men. So now you can actually get the case quashed sooner. Second, it exempts people from personal appearance. For old people, they had to go to that place for trial, for appearances that can be exempted. This does not take away, like Diptanshu said, these judgments, these guidelines have come in the past, and this is nothing extraordinary that has happened. And one thing beautiful about this judgment, I will say, Sarah, and it needs to happen with all the laws, like Sir said, let's create laws, assess their use. Because you know what? If people are taking advantage of law, there will be backlash. People can take it in any which ways.
If people take advantage, there will be backlash. This is backlash. You need to assess laws. It's been
so acknowledging it's backlash.
Came into place.
You're acknowledging
because of the misuse.
Let him make his closing argument. Just, it's been 30 years since we still have dowry deaths.
Yeah.
So clearly something is going wrong.
Yeah. So when I was questioning the earlier position, I said that the argument itself is not worthy of serious consideration. The argument that suggests that large numbers of men are suffering. I'm saying there are individual cases that may happen, but that does not qualify as an argument that suggests that is what ideal social justice would be based on, which is why I think it's a completely fallacious argument. And please go and do some reading on gender studies, a very basic sociology 101.
Sir, gender studies
number two, can I just finish?
I think the trust in government
and judges is very touching, but completely misplaced. In our society, if the states and bureaucracies were such fine examples of delivering social justice, we'd have a utopia. So I think that we need to think carefully about that. The law is not only about the law and legality. It is about taking feedback from wider society. We have various sections that protect, and I use the term very carefully, women don't need protection. That's the wrong term. But there are laws that are against violence against women, not because judges have wanted them, not because lawyers have wanted them, but because there has been public activism for them. So I think that we need to consider the law is a social artifact. Mm-hmm. And unless you take feedback from many different sections of society, rather than only considering bureaucratic, administrative, and legal angles, we are never going to have a just society. I mean, that is where we need to understand that the law needs to become more social, not more legal.
I think I need to place a question before all of you. Have any of you, barring Brinda, been to a criminal court in the position of a witness or facing an action, civil or criminal? That's a concern which you have to have. That's something which you need to realize. What happens to the person who files the complaint, and what is the impact to the person who loses their liberty? That's a serious concern.
Sure.
And this, just a minute, sir. It's not, we can't make light of the fact that people are losing liberty. We have to look at that aspect also. Secondly, last year, 2015.
Closing argument.
Yeah. 100,000-odd cases were filed for 498A. These are excluding the ones that were settled possibly at the crime against women's cell. We need to have the law. The only question is, can we have an amalgamation of the law with safeguards for effective investigation where the guilty are prosecuted and not a roping in for everybody, and people's liberty is not taken over? Because taking a person into custody doesn't mean that you prove their guilt. That's a matter for trial much later. And that's a complaint we need to address.
Women aren't always the victims. Women can also be the perpetrators. What are we putting in place to protect the rights of men?
So let's look at the Rajesh Sharma
closing argument
judgment very differently. It's a scathing indictment of the criminal justice system. It's not a scathing indictment of women. It's saying to you, and everybody knows, you don't walk into a police station and get any FIR or any complaint registered. It says that the police is doing its job all wrong. It's saying the magistrate taking cognizance is doing the job all wrong. It's saying the prosecutor is doing his job all wrong. It's saying at the state of charge, people who are innocent are not being discharged. Well, I think the Supreme Court should haul up the entire criminal justice system if that's what's happening in the country, because that's what I read into this. The second point, this is a huge departure. It's not in the line of earlier judgments, not only because I do think they have trespassed into the domain of the legislature. This is different from Vishakha. There was a gap in the law, therefore guidelines were put. This is not of that nature, so we can't confuse and conflate the two. Secondly, if the arrest part, both by the Delhi High Court judgment and the Arnesh Kumar judgment, had already been stopped, this is not about liberty here anymore. Nobody is getting arrested across the country, even pre-Rajesh Sharma. This is about telling women that when violence against you is perpetrated by somebody known to you within the family, we will not treat it as a crime. That person will not be a criminal. It will be dealt with outside the criminal justice system, and that is unacceptable.
We're extremely out of time. We'll just have to wait and see what the court decides this week. And perhaps we'll be back again to debate this further, because it's certainly more views need to be heard. Nobody's had their say. We're out of time. Thank you so much, all. Bye-bye.